Welcome to season 2, episode 21 of The Mentor's Voice. I'm Chris Moorman, president of Markentum, and I am joined by Christy Kramer, VP of Student Engagement at Leading Age. Christy, as always, you get to introduce the mentor. Who is on our show today?
Well, I'm excited because we have a nurse practitioner on the show today. So we're going a little towards the clinical leadership side here. And her name... Yeah, it's good. So her name is Tanisha Mojica, and she is the Director of Clinical Services at Providence Mount St. Vincent, which I learned is affectionately known as the Mount.
Awesome.
And it's a what they call a vibrant living care community for older adults in the Western Seattle area. So she's on the West Coast out there in Washington State. So hopefully we have a lot of Washington State people listening to this episode. I love having someone from clinical leadership talking because we can really get a lot of a different perspective being a nurse practitioner and having to lead clinicians, especially through the past few years.
And I'm a huge fan of Seattle. That's where my mom's entire family is. So just a little shout out to the Northwest or the Northbest, as we affectionately call it. Somehow I ended up on the exact opposite side of the country in Florida, but Seattle will forever have a special place in my heart. So big thanks again to Tanisha for being on the show today. We are excited for you to hear her insight and what she has to share. As always, we are excited about the opportunity to encourage students and young professionals. That's really the heart and passion behind The Mentor's Voice, is allowing these upcoming students and young professionals in aging services to connect with some really great people. And so Adam Snyder has been holding it down as the Leading Age intern this past summer and into the fall. He is also Columbia University MHA candidate. And we are beyond thankful for his work on the show to get these great interviews for us and for you. So we do hope that you please enjoy this episode, episode 21 of season 2, featuring Tanisha Mojica.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for meeting with me today. So first, would you mind telling us about your background and current work interests?
Sure. So I am actually trained as a family nurse practitioner. So I worked for more than 20 years in oncology, kind of all across the U.S. I've been in Seattle for, 8 years? Started at the VA. I'm from the East Coast, so started at the VA and then moved out here and worked in couple of different hospital based settings with oncology clinic, and then decided that I wanted to transition into leadership, and found it difficult in the settings that I was working in with being a nurse practitioner. Felt a little bit limited in terms of what leadership opportunities were going to be available to me. And so I started deciding that I may need to look outside of oncology. And then saw opportunity here. So I'm currently the Director of Clinical Services at Providence Mount St. Vincent, mm-hmm. which is a large skilled nursing facility based in West Seattle. So we have assisted living, skilled nursing, and then we also have Sisters of Providence. Large facility. So I've been here a little over 2.5 years. So right before the pandemic. Mm. And so I've had most of my experience in oncology was with prostate cancer. So with older patients, and even starting my career as a nurse practitioner at the VA in New York, I worked in urology. So again, saw a lot of elderly patients with different type of complaints. So I've always had, my career has kind of always pretty much been with geriatrics. You know, elders have a lot of wisdom to offer those of us who are from a different generation, and so have not ever regretted kind of the career path and the different avenues that that's taken me.
Right. And that's wonderful. So how have you incorporated your previous clinical background into your administrative duties for increased care quality?
So yeah, they has come very much, very helpful. Just kind of having an understanding too of kind of the acute care world in terms of how the processes involved when patients are at the hospital and are looking for placement. And also the acuity of the patients that we get from the hospital or that even have been long-term care residents in our building has increased since the pandemic. And so I'm able to kind of use my acute care experience in terms of different things that I've seen. We're seeing more patients, for instance, that have cancer or just have more serious healthcare problems. So I think the landscape for the type of patients in skilled nursing has changed. Really, it's because hospitals are also under pressure to get patients out of the hospital sooner, which means they're coming to us a little sicker potentially than they, you know, somewhat stable, but sicker than they were before. And so just kind of using my experience of working in different environments and what it's like to work with the case managers and then have a more global picture of that relationship between kind of inpatient and outpatient.
And you really touched on like, what is the next steps? And so I wonder now what you feel in the coming years, key challenges you anticipate for future leaders will have regarding, you know, high staffage turnover, care quality maintenance with fewer available resources in our aging society.
Yeah. I mean, we're looking right before the pandemic, actually Providence had been looking to kind of change to do a different type of build out for our community here so that we can, you know, really ideally you want people to kind of be aging at home. And so what does that look like? Having different type of apartments and other different type of settings for, elders in the community. Because I think that what we're seeing now is probably the new norm. And with the staffing challenges, which I don't expect, unfortunately, to go away anytime soon, we have to kind of look at a lot of patients, they don't necessarily want to be in a skilled nursing facility. So I think kind of looking at how do you engage patients and their families and have them be able to continue leading a vibrant life, but with some additional supports that they need. And so I think we're going to have different models, you know, skilled nursing, apartments, which we have assisted living, maybe some type of an in-between of those for different type of patients.
So now looking back to what your current challenges are, what do you feel like you have the most great difficulty with tackling during,
It's okay. I saw it. No problem.
Yeah. What are the greatest challenges you have tackled in your role as Director of Clinical Services? And what have you done to address them, especially regarding COVID-19 and the beginning of your directorship?
So, yeah, I mean, it's been, I think, one of the most rewarding, but probably the most challenging times of my career because I was brand new to this organization. I was brand new to this role. I was here for like 2 weeks and our annual survey from the state arrived. And then right after that, COVID kind of started. And so COVID has been, as you know, had a significant impact on everything. We were closed to admissions for a significant portion because in the beginning, of course, without vaccines and so forth, my staff and our residents were not vaccinated. And so we had several big outbreaks. And because we're such a big facility, we were able to handle it by cohorting, but that presented challenges. Staff were upset about, you know, potentially needing to work in a COVID unit. And then as that's gone on, as you know, a lot of caregivers have decided to leave the workforce for a variety of reasons. People are very fatigued. So trying to keep people motivated and having them feel appreciated 2.5 years into the pandemic, although things in the outside community have somewhat returned to quote unquote normal within the skilled nursing facility because of our regulations and because we're a congregate living setting, it's not back to normal. So we're still wearing universal masking and face shields. And although we've opened up as much as we feel is safe to visitation and activities for our residents, I mean, it's something we're talking about on a daily basis because there's a constant discussion every day about risk versus benefit in terms of what's going on in our building, what we can offer to our residents. I think it has been extremely challenging for our residents and patients. You know, when we were closed to admissions, we were also closed to visitation. I made that decision very early on. We have multiple entrances, for instance, into my building, and we shut down and still only have kind of one entrance because we're doing screening. But it meant that my residents were separated from their families for long periods of time. And so we were having to deal with, you know, isolation, and some, you know, some residents didn't do well. We saw increased falls because of that isolation for a period of time. We have a fabulous rehab team that we were assigning extra physical therapists and OTs to kind of just be supportive on our different units to help residents. But it has, yeah, so it's been challenging for our residents. It's been really challenging for our staff. I think in the beginning, staff thought, we kept thinking, we're going to just get through this wave. We're going to get through this wave. We're going to get vaccinated. We're going to get the booster, and it's going to go away. And what we found now with the new variants, of course, it's not going away. And this is probably going to be our new norm. Just trying to be as supportive of staff and recognizing that it's really difficult to continue, you know, day in and day out with these new changes. The Mount is a special type of skilled nursing facility, or AL. So our units are actually called neighborhoods, and they're set up kind of as home-like environments. So most of them have a dining area kind of within the neighborhood. So they don't look like a traditional, I think, nursing home setting. And that has been wonderful. But of course, then with all of these challenges, when COVID's in the building and then you can't have communal eating or dining, just has been challenging. But we're fortunate, I think, to be affiliated with a large healthcare corporation. So we are part of Providence, mm-hmm. St. Joe's healthcare system. And so that meant that we had different resources than some other freestanding skilled nursing facilities. So we did have access to PPE, for instance, I think earlier in the pandemic than some other freestanding buildings, which was helpful certainly for us, and just having the support of a larger team.
Right, absolutely. And it's interesting you mentioned and you discuss how it's interesting how you discuss how important it is to continue to maintain the level of security regarding COVID-19 for among staff and that. And I think that's a very good aspect and good direction. And actually, you know, I used to work as a nurse aide in Ohio, and just depending on the state as well, like, it's very different in how they've decided to approach this new norm. And right. Obviously those differences regarding that have changed the way that residents are being able to be taken care of, also versus how many cases of COVID-19 are still going on.
Right. So we're lucky. I mean, we're very fortunate. Most skilled nursing facilities, at least in Washington state, had a mandate where you have to have a full-time infection preventionist on staff. And so we already had someone kind of in that role. And then, of course, that role has expanded with COVID. And so she's been wonderful. And so we have a really solid kind of COVID-19 management team, where we're constantly, you know, meeting to discuss what's going on in our building, who's developing symptoms. And we are also still by regulations testing our staff right now twice a week across different shifts. And so that's also been challenging just from with staffing challenges. There's only a small group of us that are kind of taking care of running that testing,
right,
as well as testing residents when needed for symptoms or if we're having an out.
Right. And so from all these experiences, what lessons and key learnings have you internalized that have helped you become the leader you are today?
I think I really try and lead from a point of compassion. I know how difficult it has been for my residents. I really understand that, and I don't forget that. So always keeping that in the forefront when we're making decisions about how it's going to impact not only my staff, but the residents. And then also being compassionate with our caregivers. I mean, I've been a frontline nurse. I know how difficult it is when there's kind of competing priorities and what do you put your kind of interest in? I think we're still taking exceptional care of our residents. We do a lot to support our caregivers, or which is what we call our staff members, through town halls and just really open communication. I have open door policy, so I know I have staff in my office all the time, which I think is really important, around frequently. So I think leading from compassion, and also recognizing there's always, I tell my managers this all the time, there's always two sides to a story, right? So it's really important that you kind of have try and obtain information so you have a big picture, and that you don't take just the first thing someone is telling you is necessarily the truth about what is going on. And I think that comes from something my grandfather taught me a long time ago about, compassion. And so I try and lead from that.
Right. That's a wonderful key outtake as well. And so from that, there are so many students that could benefit from mentors like you. So I wonder, what do you think students should do to go about finding guidance in the field of geriatrics? How should they go find mentors and people for this kind of advice?
So, I think there's lots of wonderful professional organizations, depending if they're where they are, if they're in public health or if they're in a nursing program. A lot of nursing programs now have specialties or subspecialties in geriatrics. I think that, and with really solid faculty that can help. I mean, there's organizations obviously like Leading Age, which has lots of wonderful free resources for students. And they should just network. So they really should take advantage of their contacts that they have through school, through their professors, through other students. As you know, a lot of, particularly in nursing, people come into nursing at all different ages. And so they're not, they may have had other career journeys before they became a nurse. They probably have contacts from that. So just really utilizing all of that and reach out. I mean, when I was looking to transition into this role, I at the time was working at Seattle Cancer Care Alliance in UW, and I just reached out kind of cold to the chief nursing executive at both SCCA and UW and asked to have a meeting just to talk about what their journey had been into nursing. And it's just helpful sometimes. Sometimes you do have to kind of, I think, be a little bold and go outside of your comfort zone. But most, in my experience, people are always willing to talk about their experiences and their journey.
Absolutely. Definitely. That is definitely true. And so in addition to that, I wonder, what do you feel is really important professionally and academically for students to experience, and what should they do to pursue them for improving their ability to lead geriatric organization operations in the future?
I think having an understanding of all working in different types of environments where you might be dealing with the geriatric population. So although I've been in healthcare for 20 plus years, I had an understanding, but somewhat limited, of how the skilled nursing facilities operate. It's really, I think, key to have an understanding of that if you're going to have a career in geriatrics. So if you're really interested, even if you decide that you're not going to work in a skilled nursing facility, I think it's important that you try and have clinicals in those environments, or volunteer, or just come for a visit, so that you kind of have an understanding of all the different avenues or ways where patients, as they age, can end up. You know, the hospital is kind of one place and outpatient clinics another, but there are a large portion of our elders are in some type of a skilled nursing or assisted living setting. And so I think it's important that you people kind of broaden their perspective of that.
Right. And just to add on to that, what kind of advice would you give yourself if you were back in college, undergrad, and as a young professional to better navigate and explore your interest in geriatrics?
I don't know that I would change anything. I think my path, I think like most of us, sometimes you just kind of fall into a path. I had applied as a brand new nurse practitioner in New York and wanted to work at the VA, and urology was the opening. I didn't necessarily train in urology when I was in NP school, but because I had training in both adults and pediatrics, it kind of opened. I was able to do a lot. And so I don't really regret that career path. And then things kind of just went from there, because I got in that position, was helping to manage some patients that were undergoing cancer treatment. And then it kind of just realized I really loved the acute care and dealing with kind of chronic illness, and it kind of just snowballed. So I think I think one of the things that has made me a good nurse practitioner, and I think has helped me as a leader, is that I have a broad background. So although I was, for instance, trained as a nurse practitioner and I was pre-med in college, I actually was a French studies major. So I took classes in art history and I took classes in sociology and economics. I think having kind of a broad-based background enables you to kind of, I think, understand processes in a different way, and also enables you to engage different groups of people in different ways because you have kind of different knowledge.
Right. Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time today, for speaking with us. We've learned so much. One last question. What are some top books that you would recommend students to read recently that you've liked or that you think would be very valuable?
I mean, I actually think just, I'm in the Puget Sound, so reading the Puget Sound Business Journal. I think I'm keeping apprised of kind of current events as they relate to healthcare is really important. Healthcare, as you know, is kind of business focused. I think any leader or student really has to have at least a baseline understanding of kind of those components. And then reading, you know, there's a lot of good books just even on Amazon about leading kind of with emotional courage. I think it's, and from a point of empathy, I think are key. And those are the type of books that I try and gear towards. There's all sorts of books about organization as well, but I really think drilling down on how the kind of key components of being a leader. And there are all sorts of different ways everyone approaches it differently, but those type of resources can are helpful.
Absolutely. Well, that concludes our interview. Thank you so much for your time, your wisdom, and your guidance. We really appreciate it.
Leading Age, the trusted voice in aging, in partnership with Markentum, a marketing agency focused on the field of aging, is excited to present you with the Mentor's Voice. We believe that conversation between our field's mentors and the next generation of students and young professionals is vital for the ongoing success in the field of aging. Each episode of the Mentor's Voice podcast will feature a student or young professional interviewing a mentor. Through this conversation, the Mentor's Voice gives us all an opportunity to learn from each other, new and seasoned alike.
Thanks so much for listening to Season 2, Episode 21, featuring Tanisha Mojica. Christy, we've got some exciting things happening in just a few weeks in the world of Leading Age. Tell us more.
Yes, of course. We are so close now to our annual meeting in Denver, Colorado. We have so many things lined up. So if you're a student, it's still time to register to attend. $29 registration rate. Denver, Colorado is such a cool city. You'll get to do a lot of things. We have a really cool event, and hopefully it's not sold out yet, where you can do a wellness event at the Red Rocks Amphitheater. So that'll be very exciting. In addition to all the networking and all of the opportunities you'll have to learn from different leaders in our field. So come on down. We have great events. I heard our keynote speaker, Chris, is Abby Wambach. And for any of you soccer fans out there, Abby Wambach is super cool. I'm very excited to hear from her and what she has to do to talk about leadership. So very excited.
Will she refer to it as soccer or football?
Well, you know, she's American, so she refers to it as soccer.
Probably
so.
Soccer. Okay.
Yeah. It's going to be great. Hopefully we'll get an opportunity to meet her and talk with her.
That'd be very awesome. And of course, the Mentor's Voice will be there, and look forward to connecting with you as well. So as Christy mentioned, if you have any further questions about the program, You can absolutely reach out to us. You can visit our website on thementorsvoice.com, where you'll be able to subscribe to our podcast. And you can also get connected to our social media accounts, which means you have the opportunity to send us a direct message about any questions you may have, student, mentor, or otherwise. You just want to get to know us. You want to get to know Christy's favorite rum drink. I don't know. That's up for you to decide what kind of questions you've got. But we are so thankful to get connected with you as always. And thank you so much for ongoing support and listening to The Mentor's Voice.